belongs to an elite and exclusive club of actors who have won the four top entertainment awards. She received an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in West Side Story, a Grammy for the Electric Company album, a Tony for her performance in The Ritz, and two Emmys, one for The Muppet Show and the other for The Rockford Files. Not bad for a girl who made her Broadway debut when she was 13 years old. Rita Moreno is in Philadelphia to present My Life from Zero to 60 plus 20. It's a kickoff of the Kimmel Center's Voz Congreso, and that's a series of conversations with Latino celebrities and intellectuals. She's speaking tonight at 7:30, or performing tonight at 7:30. Rita Moreno joins us on Radio Time to talk about her extraordinary life and career, and it's a great pleasure to have you with us on Radio Times.
I'm delighted to be here.
I'm interested in this 60 to 80. Is that a hard transition for a woman to make?
Not for me. Age is never, I don't even think about it. You know, I'm 80 now.
I know you are.
And that is amazing to me. that did get my attention when I became 80 last December. But other than that, it's not something I ever think about. I'm a very energetic person, always have been. I have lots of stamina, and I have many interests. I have a family that I adore, and I just feel very privileged.
Mm.
Very privileged. And I'm still working. You know, that's really exceptional to me.
Well, I do want to talk about all of that. Has retirement, the word retirement, ever crossed your
mind? Doesn't even cross my mind. You know, I can see me now in some play when I'm, I don't know, 90 and on roller skates and having some leading man say, "Get that bitch off the stage. She's upstaging me."
Well, I would watch that play.
I would kind of love that.
It would be fun. Can we go back to the beginning of your life?
Yeah.
You were born in Puerto Rico.
I was born in Humacao, Puerto Rico, and I came to this country when I was 5 years old with my mother. We came by ship because we couldn't afford airplanes in those days. I mean, and you know, my mom barely spoke English. I spoke none. And I think the most shocking thing initially about coming to this country was the cold.
Oh, indeed.
It was in February.
Indeed. And you went to New York, I'm assuming.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, you know what's wonderful? I got a gift last year of the list of passengers on that ship. Isn't that marvelous?
Yes.
And it has my mother's name there, along with other passengers. And it has my name, which was Rosa Dolores Alverio. And my mom was Rosa Maria Marcano, because she was divorced, so she went back to her original name. But that's a great thing to have. And we have and on this wonderful thing, which I've had laminated, is the picture of the ship.
Oh, my goodness.
Which I have to amuse you with this. It was called the SS Carabobo. Literally, the meaning of that in Spanish is stupid face. I cannot imagine why
anybody would call a ship
stupid face. I've been trying to find out ever since then. And I could, you know, when I first saw this, I said, "Cara bobo," because cara is face. Bobo is dumb, you know, dumb face.
Well, you showed them, right?
But it's not, you know, it's not a very good portent.
No, it isn't. But I'm also, you lived in Puerto Rico till you were about five,
yeah,
right? What was your, was this a village, a town?
It was a little village.
A little village.
And it was a little village called Juncos. I was born in Humacao because that's where they had the hospital.
Oh, wow.
And I have great memories, you know, joyous memories. It's a tropical place. There's the sounds are always birds and roosters crowing and dogs barking and people laughing. We're a very raucous people. and we what's lovely about it, too, because since I'm doing my memoir, everything is coming into my head now. All these sounds and smells and beautiful. So the contrast when I was on that bus on the way to an apartment with my mom was so startling, and I was freezing.
And probably, you were, 5 years old? You didn't know the language.
We didn't know the language, and we'd had a very, very rough trip, a journey on the ship.
Bad weather?
Oh, boy. Yeah. We were delayed, in fact, because the weather was so severe, and which usually didn't happen. But it did to us, and so we were already very traumatized.
Yeah. Where did you first live then? In the Bronx.
In the Bronx, yeah.
In one of those big apartment buildings?
Oh yeah, one of those huge ones.
Yeah,
yeah, with the very dim lights in the halls and all that kind of stuff. always on the fifth floor because that's where the cheaper apartments were.
What was your apartment like?
And in fact, we stayed with an aunt of my mom's, a woman we called Titi, which is a way of saying auntie.
Yeah.
And it was a four-bedroom apartment with three families in it. And we were the fourth.
When did you start taking, what, dance lessons, singing lessons?
I think it's when I was about 6 years old.
Wow.
Because my mom had a friend who was a Spanish dancer, Irene Lopez, who saw me bopping around the apartment and said, you know, I have a feeling that Rosita has talent. Why don't you let me take her to my teacher, which is what happened. And I went to see a man named Paco Cancino, who was big deal, Rita Hayworth's uncle.
Oh, my goodness.
Because she was Margarita Cancino originally. Yeah. So it was.
There's a lot of that, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh, that was thrilling. And I literally made my debut when I was six, dancing in a nightclub with a Spanish nightclub in the village with my dance teacher, who was very short.
Were six-year-olds allowed in nightclubs at that time, or people looked the other
way?
Well,
it was a special occasion, and yeah. I just went there and danced with him and then left. But it happened very early in my life.
Well, and at the age of 13, you were on Broadway. You made your debut on Broadway in a play called Sky Drift, mm-hmm. Eli Wallach.
It was his first play.
It was his first play.
Yeah.
And I guess yours as well.
Yeah, right. And I've known Eli ever since. We've done things together. We did a play together. We did a movie about 6 years ago, something like that. And it lasted literally 2 days.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's show business.
Yeah. The critics got a hold of it.
2 days. Yeah. I could sense that, I could sense the audience getting very restless during our scene because we were playing an Italian family where the son comes back for a last goodbye with his mother, but we don't see him. We don't hear him. And Mom is talking to this guy, and I'm saying my older brother, I'm saying, Mama, what's going on? What are you doing? And I could sense the audience was very restless. They were bored. They were shifting in their seats. Very early instinct on my part. And they were coughing a lot. So I thought I would help the scene. I can't believe I did this.
What did you do?
What I did was we were supposed to be having dinner. And we were having spaghetti, of course. And I started to suck up these long strings of spaghetti to help the scene along.
Of course. And did it?
Well, people started to giggle. And the lady who was the leading lady, Lily Valente, grabbed me by the neck in the wings after the curtain came down. And she literally grabbed me by the neck and shook me, and she's my skinny little neck. And she said, if you ever, ever, ever try this again, I will hear about it, and I will find you, and I will kill you.
Wow. That was your introduction to Broadway, right?
No, that was my introduction to stay out of other people's business.
Yes.
As an actor, don't even move.
And upstage somebody else.
Upstage. Right? Oh, my God. She was ready to kill me. I don't blame her, by the way.
But it was a very creative, bold thing for a young actress to do.
It actually was creative because I could sense that they were. But, on the other hand, this has happened before and it will always happen where people get restless in an audience and you're still stuck with that scene.
Yes.
And, what are you going to do that's really different to make people pay attention to you? If the scene is boring, it's boring. So, yes, it was creative in a way, but I sure learned a lesson.
But did you think at the age of 13, my acting career is over since this play closed after 2 days?
Yes, I did. I did. I went back to my Spanish dancing. I did a lot of Jewish weddings, bar mitzvahs. I performed at those things, doing my little Carmen Miranda imitation and stuff like that.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you were scouted. Someone scouted you, I guess, a couple of
years
ago.
An MGM scout.
Yeah.
Actually came to a dance school recital. And, I mean, these people really went to these things in those days. And
had they heard about you or they were just scouting around?
No, they were just scouting. Like the way scouts very often do. They'll just go to a baseball game with kids and, look for promising kids. And he gave my mother his card, and he said, the time isn't ripe right now, but I think Rosita has a future.
Oh, wow.
And MGM, of course, was my favorite studio because it had all the great musical artists. You know, Judy Garland, Gene Kelly. It was just rife with people like that. And sure enough, about 6 months later, he called and said, I want you to meet Louis B. Mayer.
So how old were you at the time, do you
think? I was just 16.
Just 16. And you had an interview with Louis B. Mayer?
Yeah, at a penthouse in the Waldorf Astoria. I didn't even know what a penthouse was. I'd never heard of the Waldorf Astoria, nor did my mother. We lived in the ghetto. And when we announced ourselves at the desk, they said, okay, yeah, you're expected, penthouse. My mom and I didn't know what that was. What is a penthouse? And we went to the elevator and didn't know what to ring, so we had to go back, we had to go back to the desk.
So what is the penthouse?
I'm sorry, what is the penthouse?
Like, which floor is the penthouse
right,
on?
What floor? And they said, dear, it's the top floor.
Yes.
Oh. I met him, and the most amazing thing happened. I was trying very hard to look like Elizabeth Taylor, who was my idol then, because there were certainly no Latin models at the time. None.
She was at least dark-haired.
Yeah, right. And I had my waist cinched in, like her. And Mr. Mayer, I still call him Mr. Mayer, which is hilarious, said, she looks like a Spanish Elizabeth Taylor. Let's sign her. That was it. He had no idea what I could do. He was taking the word of a talent scout who said, you know, I think she's fodder. I think she's good for MGM. And that was that. And about 6 months later, we went, my mother and I went to California.
Wow. And where did you find an apartment somewhere?
We found a little house in Culver City, which is where the studio was. And that's where it all started.
Wow. And waiting for the phone to ring, or was there a part waiting you there?
They had a part for me.
They did.
I was there for about 2 months before they found a part for me in a Mario Lanza film. Mario Lanza was the Andrea Bocelli of his time.
Oh.
He was a big, big, famous, very popular tenor. And he'd only done one film before this one. This was to be his second. And he had made a huge hit in the first one. So there I was, dancing with James Mitchell, who was with the New York City Ballet at the time. That didn't mean a thing to me because I had never gone to ballet. I'd never seen theater. I'd never gone to theater
really
in my life.
Had you sung before?
I sang on amateur shows on the radio, and I did some acting stuff. I did one of the Ave Maria Hour where I played Bernadette, and the who sees visions, the lady in the cave, and it was hilarious because it was always filled with things like, but I tell you, I saw this lady with a veil. And they say, get that child out of here. She's mad. No, but I saw this lady with the blue veil in the grotto. That was the extent of my radio stuff.
Well, we're going to pick up on your life and career, Rita Moreno, after a very short break. And we'll be talking about West Side Story, of course, the role that won you an Oscar.
Yeah.
And Rita Moreno is our guest today in Radio Times. And tonight she's presenting My Life from 0 to 60 plus 20. It's a kickoff at the Kimmel Center's Voz Congreso. And she joins us today in Radio Times, performing tonight at 7:30. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, 7th Generation, celebrating Earth Day every day with eco-friendly solutions ranging from dish liquid to detergent to diapers. More at 7thgeneration.com. Caring today for 7 generations of tomorrows.
WHYY is proudly supported by the new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro. Opening May 22nd, the new hospital is being built with all single-patient rooms and has been designed with innovations that may help improve healing and lower infections. Features include a new rapid-response emergency room and CHOP docs to care for children. The new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro, redefining care. Opening May 22nd. More at princetonhcs.org.
Hi, I'm Michelle Martin. On my show, Tell Me More, we look behind the headlines to see what's really happening around the country and the world, from Zimbabwe to right here in Philadelphia. As the city suffered through an outbreak of violence, we heard from community activists like Kenny Gamble.
We are peacemakers. We are trying to make a model here in Philadelphia.
And we will bring you more stories that tell us more about who we are and where we live. Tell Me More, weekdays at 1 on WHYY, Philadelphia's NPR news station.
First Trust Bank supports WHYY, and First Trust supports Philadelphia's business community. Whether you need a loan, a line of credit, real estate financing, or cash management services, First Trust is here, ready to help. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen talking with Rita Moreno about her extraordinary life and career. She joins us here in our Philadelphia studios in Philadelphia for an event tonight at the Kimmel Center. Well, we're sort of walking through your life here and working our way.
It's a lot of life.
It is a lot.
I'm 80 years old.
I know. We're going to try to shoehorn as much as we can. Just a couple of stops, actually, before we get to West Side Story, because you were in Singing in the Rain.
Oh, yeah.
You were in The King and I.
Yeah. My favorite movie of all time is Singing in the Rain.
Wow.
Not because I'm in it, because I had a very small role in it. But I think it's a classic. But you know, I was thinking about that the other day, and I'm in a number of classics. I hadn't thought about that before. I'm in Singing in the Rain. I'm in King and I.
Yes.
I'm, of course, in West Side Story. And the other one that I consider a classic is Carnal Knowledge.
Oh, indeed.
Which was a groundbreaker, that film.
Well, we were watching that scene of you.
The scene.
You play actually a prostitute.
Playing a high-class hookah. And it's coaxing Jack Nicholson into how shall we put it,
an erection.
Oh, can we actually say that?
I think we can.
Yeah, and she's talking him into it because he's such a wreck at this point. He's such a terrible person. It's quite a scene.
It is, and I have to say, we were looking at it, trying to debate whether to play it, but what's so fascinating is sort of the look on your face and the look on his face. And obviously that doesn't work on the radio.
The beatific look on his face is because it's working, what she's saying to him. She's telling him that he's the king of the world, that he's really better than any woman in the world, which is what he needs to hear. It's just a frightful scene. And I remember I had a really hard time saying yes to it. I turned it down originally, and then Mike Nichols asked to see me, and I didn't even know him.
Yeah.
And why, he was so intent on having me play that role, I don't know. And I went to his apartment, and he literally talked me into it. You know, by the time he was through with this interview with me, he made me think that the whole movie revolved around this character, Louise. And in a way it does, but he did talk me into it.
Oh,
and my husband was not thrilled, I can tell you that.
Well,
he said to me, "I really, really, really don't want you to do this, Rita." I said, "But it's Mike Nichols, and it's Jules Pfeiffer, and it's Jack Nicholson, blah, blah."
Did he see it? Did he see the movie?
We finally saw it together, and he slapped my face at the end of it. But I'm glad I did it. I thought it was an extraordinary, very dark movie.
Indeed, indeed. And a groundbreaker, as you said.
Well, you know, the Supreme Court of Atlanta, Georgia, banned it. It was not allowed, they would not allow it to be seen in Georgia, in their supreme wisdom.
Well, let me swoop back, if I can, and even going back to West Side Story in this role of Anita. This is the one that won you both an Oscar and also a Golden Globe Award for your performance.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get that part?
With difficulty. I had to do what everyone else had to do. First of all, Jerome Robbins knew me because I did his only two films. And we met on The King and I. And it was he who brought up my name to Robert Wise, who was going to co-direct the film. And he said, "We really have to see Rita Moreno. I think she'd be, great for Anita." So I auditioned with a scene, and I auditioned with a song, and that was fine. And then Jerry said, "Well, you have to audition for the dancing, because if you can't cut that, you can't do it." Well, I hadn't danced since I was 17.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was already about 25, excuse me, when I was auditioning for West Side Story, playing a teenager. All of us playing teenagers. And I went to dancing school and registered, and I worked every day from 9 to 10 at night trying to get my dancing chops back.
Wow. Well, you did.
Well,
didn't you say?
Oh, man. But, I had help. A friend of mine had played Anita on the road, and I said, "Can you teach me some of the steps?" And she said, "Well, I can teach you a section of America and a section of the Mamba with the Gym." But she says, "There's no rule that says that they're going to use those sections. But, if you want." I said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah." And as it turns out, they gave me the section to learn. Because, you know, in a dance audition, you learn the steps and then you do it. The thing is, you have to do it with style and not like they're brand new steps. So it turned out that the dance director gave me the section she had taught me for America and the section she taught me for Mambo at the Gym. And I found out later that Jerry was very anxious to know if I had made it because he really wanted me in the film. And apparently what his assistant said was, well, you know, she obviously needs some work. But she says she has vitality and she's got a great sense of humor and blah, blah, and a sense of style. But she will need work, he says. But what's really amazing is how quickly she learned the steps.
Not knowing.
No, of course not. Of course not.
Can I ask you just a couple questions about Jerome Robinson? Then I do want to play just a clip from West Side Story of you singing America. But everything I read about him, and it sounded like he wanted to work with you and you wanted to work with him, but that he was a harsh taskmaster.
He had a mental problem.
A real mean streak?
It goes beyond mean. I think he was a sadist.
Really?
And, you know, he could smell a victim a mile away. What a fascinating man in a way. And, I mean, he would pick somebody out of a crowd and start picking on them. Wow. He did this in The King and I, too. He was scary. I'd never seen anyone work like that before. He was he had everyone under his thumb. He was very frightening. And he had no qualms about humiliating people. I mean, he did it to Stephen Sondheim when they were apparently doing the stage version. He had no qualms about that. He was a strange guy, and he was very hard on me. But what he didn't do to me is humiliate me. And I asked George Chakiris only recently. I said, "Why do you think he was decent to me?" And George says, "I can only imagine that he saw you working so hard. Because you know, on my breaks, on all the breaks that we would get, 10-minute breaks where everybody would light up a cigarette like all dancers do, I would be still rehearsing." I never stopped rehearsing because I had a lot. Those kids were fabulous. I was far from fabulous. And I still don't think I was fabulous in the movie. I think I was good in the role of Anita. But I don't think that I really cut the dancing the way these other kids did. Not ever.
And he choreographed.
So I guess there was some kind of respect on his part for me, which is amazing.
It is. But he choreographed for character.
That's what made him so special. I mean, the steps I had as Anita in America, no one else could have done. No other character could have done. They were specifically designed for our characters. And that's what made him, he was a genius. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that if he were still around and asked me to work with him again, I would drop everything.
Interesting.
And most dancers say that.
Yeah. In spite of...
Even the ones who have been beaten up emotionally, and I mean severely, he could make a dancer. I know one dancer who was in the film. When he did the stage version with Jerry, was asked to do a step 50 times 5-0, and Jay just stuck to it. That was the dancer's name, and he just did it 50 times. And he said he had to go to bed for 3 days. He was everything on his body just hurt.
That's Rita Moreno, our guest today on Radio Times. We're talking about her extraordinary life and career. And I do want to play you singing America. And this, of course, the original 1961 West Side Story, original soundtrack, music by Leonard Bernstein, lyrics by Stephen Sondheim. Let's listen.
My heart's devotion, let it sink back in the ocean. Always the hurricane's blowing, always the population growing, and the money owing, and the sunlight streaming, and the natives steaming. I like the island Manhattan.
I know you do.
Smoke on your pipe and good Latin.
I like to be in America. Okay, by me in America. Everything free in America.
For a smoke, be in America.
Okay.
and it is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have though to keep clean?
Skyscrapers bloom in America. Cadillac bloom in America. Industry bloom in America.
12 in a room in America.
Well, Rita Moreno is singing along with herself.
I listening love it. I love it.
It's fabulous.
You know what made it extra special is that Jerry Robbins added the boys to that number. In the stage version, even now, and I think the number suffers for it, it's only the girls.
Wow.
But in the movie, he added this just hilarious, delicious, funny dance section for the boys that was just delightful. And that really made it a competition.
Well, and the intensity and the joy, the pleasure is so obvious.
But I have to tell you, too, that the girl who said, when I say, I like the I Love My Man, she says, I know you do. That was not part of it.
She just, is that right?
That was Yvonne, who was a very funny girl, did it. And now every production that does it does the I know you do. It's delightful.
But those words are so great. I mean, it must be fun to sing those kinds of lyrics.
Oh, and you're singing Stephen Sondheim's words, for Pete's sake. And you're singing Leonard Bernstein's music. My God, what could be bad?
I was reading that you had some complaints about the dark makeup that they used
I
for
was
the...
very resentful because they made us all one color. They used one color of makeup, and I was really, and I said to the makeup man, which of course was the wrong person to ask, he was simply following orders. And I said, why do we all have to be one color? Puerto Ricans are every kind of color because of the Spanish influence. My grandmother was a Spaniard, so I'm the fairest in my family. My mother was fair, too. And I have an aunt who is dusky, and not black, but she's dusky, and because that's the Taino-Indian in all of us. That's where my dark eyes come from, and my very curly hair.
Yeah.
And I really was very resentful, and there was nothing I could do about it. And I believe it was Jerome Robbins' idea. He wanted a huge contrast between... In fact, some of the Jets had their hair bleached. You know, as though somehow it wasn't enough of a contrast. So a lot of these kids had these awful bleach jobs. And you can really tell that they were bleached in the movie. But my favorite bad line, may I give you my favorite corny line? Because I was just saying to Marty when we were listening to the number that some of the language is dated. Even so, you forgive it because it's such a treasure, that movie. But one of my favorite bad lines is when the Jets are looking for Tony. After Tony kills Bernardo. And it's an intense scene. It's a number called Cool, which actually is my favorite number in the whole, because it's so character-driven in the whole movie. And after the number, they're all sweating and just so tense. And they're saying, okay, you go to the park and see if you can find Tony. You go to the schoolyard. You go to this. And one of the Jet girls actually says, I and Tony will take to the streets. I mean, I and Graziella will take to the streets. Out of this intense number comes this voice. We'll take to the streets, please. And I realize also that the reason they had to make up words, the so-called bad words, is because of the fact that you couldn't use those words then. And I don't know, somehow I'm just as glad. There's a lot of innocence in that movie.
And did you get a lot of dusky roles after West Side Story?
Oh, not after. Before. I've been doing that all my life.
Right.
And certainly I don't mind playing Latinas, but I played every nationality that had dark skin. I always had to speak with an accent in movies in the old days. So to the point where I literally invented a universal ethnic accent for all the parts. I was playing a Siamese girl. I was playing an Arabian girl. I was playing an East Indian girl. And they all sounded the same.
What did they sound like?
Well, they talked like this a little bit.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't Spanish, because Spanish is more very Latino. You do know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But they didn't talk that way. They had this weird accent that sort of was... It just was in the ether somehow. You never quite knew what... I played a Polynesian. And nobody ever said, you know, here, go to a dialect coach and learn this stuff. So I just assumed that I had to use accents. So they all talk like this.
You actually won an award for your performance in The Ritz, where you played a character named Googie Gomez.
I love Googie Gomez.
Yes, where did she come had from?
That's an interesting story. I was at a party. I was doing a play with Jimmy Coco,
yes,
called Last of the Red Hot Lovers on Broadway.
Sure.
And Jimmy had a party and invited his friend Terrence McNally, whom I'd never even heard of at that time. And he said, Rita, do that crazy Puerto Rican thing that you do. So I did. I did. I actually sang, I had a dring about your baby. It's got to come through, baby. And Terrence fell off his chair. He laughed so hard. At the end of the evening, he actually said, I am going to write a part for that character. Because I also did the Player King speech from Hamlet.
Oh, yes. Can you do that?
Epic, the speech I pray to. As I pronounce it to you, tripping in the tongue. Do not so Joan dos.
Cookie Gomez.
I did Hiawatha for him. I did. It was for the party.
Right.
So I said, from the chores of Geechee Gomez. You know, with all this import. This great trembling voice.
But where did Googie come from? Where did Googie Gomez come
she
from?
I invented her one day when we were on a 10-minute break in the movie. Because, you know, dancers do two things when they get a break. They light up a cigarette, which is always so shocking to everybody. And we would do bits, you know, crazy little bits. And one day I suddenly said, okay, here's this character, she didn't have a name, who's auditioning for a bus and truck of Gypsy. And that's where Everything's Coming Up Roses came from.
Wow.
And when I did the play, The Ritz, the cast was always coming to my dressing room and say, okay, do the Star Spangled Banner like Googie. Oh, say, can you see by the long cellulite? And I love her. She makes me laugh.
Oh, well, she's hilarious.
She is. Mostly because she's got such balls. I mean, she thinks she's the gift to show business. Barbara Streisand stole my act. She just really thinks, when I did a movie with Carol Burnett, she was constantly asking me to do Googie.
Yeah. And you got a Tony for the
Ritz. I got a Tony for the Ritz. Wow. What a thrill. What a thrill.
And there aren't too many actors who have gotten an Oscar, a Golden Globe, a Grammy, a Tony, and two Emmys. I mean, that puts you in a pretty rare.
Yeah, as Googie would say, that's pretty good.
And does Googie still live today? Is she still?
Well, I still do it. You know, I still do her benefits, particularly gay benefits and stuff for HIV and all that. The gay community just adores Googie. And I've added tricks to it. And we used her in my one-woman show about my life.
Oh, wow.
Which is called, by the way, Life Without Makeup. But we opened the second act with Googie Gomez. And I found some more new tricks to go wrong, things that go wrong, because nothing goes right.
For
in that number, Everything's Coming Up Roses. She accidentally steps on the boys' feet, her dancers. She does a wild flailing motion that hits them both in the crotch. It's very funny.
We're going to take another short break and then get back to our conversation with Rita Moreno. She's in Philadelphia to present My Life from 0 to 60 plus 20, and it's a kickoff of the Kimmel Center's Voz Congreso, a series of conversations with Latino celebrities and intellectuals. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Friends School Haverford, a preschool through 8th grade co-ed Quaker school in Haverford, PA, minutes from the Blue Route and 76, introduces its expanded middle school. Friends School Haverford has a 7-to-1 student-teacher ratio and a commitment to help meet each child's needs, including a math program that can take capable students through calculus. Travel and study adventures and a social curriculum based on respect and kindness are a few hallmarks of their program. Now accepting applications for middle school. FriendsHaverford.org.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. What happens to the Central Asia Institute now that Montana's Attorney General has ordered Three Cups of Tea author and founder Greg Mortensen off the board? They're going forward, as we'll hear. Also, Anne Lamott on sudden grandmotherhood. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Orchestra takes you beyond the score of Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, a multimedia event. Tchaikovsky, the composer, the poet, the man.
Jaap van Zweden conducts. Tickets at philorc.org or 215-893-1999. Thursday, April 19th at the Kimmel Center, Tchaikovsky, Beyond the Score with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Rita Moreno.
Hey, you guys!
That's you.
That's me. You know where that came from?
Where did that come from?
We were doing a skit with Bill Cosby. She was called Millie the Helper, the character. And it worked so well that then we did constant episodes. I mean, little bits with Bill and myself. And it came from when I'm supposed to yell, hey, you guys, it's 5 in the morning because we're delivering milk to apartments and he shuts me up. The reason is that I remember, hey, Abbott, Lou Costello, right? Abbott,
yes,
and Costello.
Absolutely.
So I applied that to this, hey, you guys. The school halls were ringing with it like the next week. And they were driving the school teachers crazy, and the principal was making rules about stop that noise. But it was hugely successful.
Well, and the electric car, I mean, the hundreds
it
of...
It became our call letters.
It did.
At the top of the show, they would always hear, hey, you guys.
Right. And you did hundreds of episodes of...
Oh, it was... What a great show. And what a noble effort it was to try to teach children how to read, which is not... easy.
No.
My daughter was one of those reluctant little kids who just didn't want to read. And she really got turned on to reading with that show.
We have posted actually on our Facebook page only because it works better if you can see it, but you singing Fever on The Muppet Show.
Do you have it on your Facebook page?
It's on the Radio Times Facebook page. People can go there.
Or they can go to YouTube.
Or go to YouTube.
Just me and Animal the drummer, and I'm singing
That's
Fever.
Where we got it, yes.
And he's making a lot of noise with the drums, and he's and I'm trying to be so sexy. Never know how much I love you. Boom, 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 crash. That's what got me, I think, my second Emmy.
Oh,
I
yeah.
really think so.
And well, it's a fabulous performance.
It's very funny.
Yes.
I love to be funny.
Yeah, I know. This is probably not a funny part of your life, but I know you had a long time romance with Marlon Brando.
I did.
It didn't end well. It doesn't sound like, at least for
no,
you.
No, it didn't. And you know, I don't want to give too much away because that's going to be in the book. But we did have a long relationship. It was tempestuous, tumultuous, exciting, sexy. All of the above, and then some. All that the name Marlon Brando implies.
Yeah,
it was a long one, and it was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, as you look, did you know it was crazy at the time, or is that more sort of looking back
no,
at it?
No, you know, you're thinking, well, you think I'm with the wrong guy. I think I'm with the wrong person, but you get addicted.
Mm.
He was like a drug.
Yeah,
he really was.
And where did you meet?
We met at the 20th Century Fox studio, where I was in the makeup department, and I couldn't find anyone there, so I went into they had one private room for big stars who didn't want to be seen being made up and stuff. And there he was working on the makeup for where he was playing Napoleon in the Desiree.
Oh, wow.
So they were working, he and his makeup man. And I stuck my head in thinking that it was one of the makeup people, and I said, oh, excuse me. And the moment I left the room, I heard him say, who is that? Who is that? And his makeup man, Philip, is saying, I don't know. He says, find out. Find out who that is.
Wow.
That's how it started.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he found you. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to switch from that to actually a show that you did on HBO called Oz. And I have to say it was a show that I did not like at first because it was so violent.
It was intense.
Intense. I mean, it took me a while to literally be able to watch the TV.
Some of my friends would leave the room when something got really very violent, and then they'd peek in again to see when they could come back to the room.
You played a nun who was also a counselor,
a
counselor, I guess, a psychologist.
And a drug counselor and a therapist. Yeah. And, you know, when I first got that part, my daughter... I called her on the phone. I said, hey, I'm going to do an HBO show. Wow, that's thrilling, Mom. What are you playing? I said, and I swallowed hard, and I said, well, I'm playing a nun.
Yes.
And there's a long pause, and then I hear this. A lot of people thought that.
Yes.
But I got a lot of respect for doing that show, which is wonderful. It's something I really needed in my profession. A lot of very important people said, well, that was brave, because I looked like hell in it. I looked like a train wreck. The lighting was really cruel. I lost parts because of that.
Because they just didn't think.
Because people say, "Well, she looks awful right now," and nobody. And I, as a result, I attended every party I was invited to, so I could show people that I was really looking swell. As a matter of fact.
Well, I used to worry about you because here you were, this what looked like largely a lone woman in this maximum security facility with these really bad guys who did really bad things.
And they were bad.
And you were there to sort of help them
with
their lives and the things that they had done.
Oh, I loved doing the show. It was marvelous. And, you know, the Christopher Maloney relationship where she gets a crush on him. Oh, well, you don't remember that?
No, I do. As a matter of fact, we have a clip from Oz, and this is you playing the psychologist, Sister Peter Marie Raimondo, and you're talking to inmate Chris Keller, played by Christopher Maloney. Let's listen to that scene.
As you know, for the past month or so, I've been preparing to leave the convent. Part of that stems from the conversations we had together. You made me doubt myself as a psychologist, as a nun, as a woman.
I'm sorry if I caused you grief.
Well, you caused me grief. And I want to thank you for it.
What?
You know, Chris, most of us tumble into our lives. We become who we are almost by accident. We try very hard not to look backwards, afraid to find out that maybe we should have done something else. But you forced me to look backwards, to question every element of my identity. By questioning, do you know what I discovered? I am a psychologist. I am a woman. I am a nun. And, all of these parts of me are not an accident. They were put together by someone else. Someone far greater. We do not choose God. God chooses us.
It's a very powerful scene.
Wow, I'd forgotten
about
that.
I'm watching you listening to yourself in that scene.
My eyes getting wide because it's so beautifully written.
It is.
Ugh. You know, Tom Fontana went to Jesuit school. Because I remember the first year, near the end of the first season, I said to him, "You're not by any chance a Catholic, are you?" And he said, "Yeah, how'd you know?" I said, "Are you kidding? All this redemption stuff."
Interesting.
Yeah. And he said, "Interesting that you should see." I said, "You know what? If you were once a Catholic, as I was," I said, "it's not hard to spot, kid."
What was it like on the set? Again, it was such an intense show.
Surprisingly, we laughed a lot. Probably because it was so intense. But, you know, there were moments. There was a moment I remember when one of the guard's eyes gets literally poked out. And they did an incredible makeup on his face. And some of the actors could not look at him, even though they knew it was makeup. And the man is writhing on the floor with pain and all that. And blood is gushing out of the sockets of his eyes. And one of the lead actors just couldn't do it. He got nauseated.
Wow.
He had to stop.
And it's amazing what HBO, I mean, other networks, I guess, like that, or cable organizations like that, what that can allow on TV.
But I'll tell you what's shocking about what I think is scandalous, that no one ever even got nominated for their acting. And there was some spectacular acting in that show. The fabulous actors. And I know why. You know, I mean, it's obvious. They didn't want to in any way flatter that show. And it's so unfair because there were some great performances, some absolutely fabulous performances in that show. And I've always been scandalized by that and very angry about it. Not fair.
You're writing a memoir.
I am.
Does that all these dredging years, up lots of memories, things that you hadn't
you
thought
know,
about before?
You know, it does. What's interesting is, you know, it's because I'm having somebody talk to me to remind me. They ask me questions and stuff, and you know, then I'm going to write that stuff down.
Yeah.
But the parts about Puerto Rico, which is how the film begins, are so vivid.
The film, you mean the book?
Did I say film?
You did.
I'm not used to that at all. I'm pretty sure it's going to be the only book I ever write.
Maybe someone will do a film about you, but yes.
Anyway, it's interesting how so many things that I thought I had forgotten, because at 80, by the way, I'm really having trouble with names now. I'm always saying, oh, you know, who's that actor and then such and I can remember the title of the movie, but not the actor's name. And but the stuff you remember after 80 years of living is astonishing to me. I remember colors. I remember what people wore. You know, I remember reading Andre Agassi's autobiography, which is spectacular.
It's a great biography.
What a marvelous book.
Yes.
But this guy has a really photographic memory because he remembers the patterns on people's ties and all that kind of. It's very impressive. So I'm getting a little of that in my life. And that's great because what I think what makes a memoir or an autobiography is the details. That's really, I think, what makes it very personal, don't you?
Sure, indeed. Are there also some tough parts for you to remember? I mean, things that were
the Marlon
difficult?
Brando part was very difficult. My mom, my husband, who passed away 2 years ago.
And you had a long marriage.
Yeah, 45 years, 46.
Wow.
We celebrated our 46th when he was in the hospital.
Yeah.
And he died 2 weeks later.
Wow. He was a physician, right?
He was. Yeah, the worst patient in the world. I mean, all of them. They're just impossible. He's telling. And you know what's terrible is that they intimidate the other doctors who are taking care of him because they have the knowledge. And the other doctors know that they can't bowl him. And he was impossible. Oh, my God. I could see the doctors rolling their eyes. And I would say to him, Lenny, have a little pity for them. Okay?
And did he follow your instructions?
Sometimes. Until he thought, you know, he had a feeling I knew.
Yeah.
I know that this was the last time he would be in a hospital.
So where did you meet him?
I met him through a dear friend who was a psychotherapist and a patient of his. And she was a friend of mine. But and I was in one of she wrote a book for her thesis about the female orgasm and why I was one of the people in it that she used. And she, in a very unpsychiatric way, she would say, she's Jewish, Leah Schaefer. And she would say, oh, Rita, there's this man I know. And then she would go to Lenny and she'd say, darling, there's a girl I know that will just put you away. She's wonderful. She never said that I was an actress.
Oh, interesting.
So it took him forever to find out that I was that Rita Moreno. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
He didn't know. He went for our first real date. We had a double date with him, with her, and then a first date. And he didn't know that I was starring in that theater where I asked him to meet me. He didn't know. And it was New Year's Eve, and I thought, well, I guess I'm being stood up. And he thought, damn, being stood up. And he comes backstage front, and he realizes what he's, and he says to me, are you the Rita Moreno? Well, I was so charmed.
Oh, indeed.
And a few months later, we married.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get nervous before performing? I mean, you have performed for, what, almost 70 years?
Yeah. Yeah, I do with plays. And I do with cabaret, too. If it's new, my knees literally knock. They do knock because I'm trembling so much, and my hands are icy cold and sweaty. When something is new...
Yeah.
I'm never happy with, you know, how much rehearsal I've had. I can never get enough rehearsal. And I get nervous because I finally found out why I get so nervous. It's because I'm so afraid of disappointing people.
Oh, wow.
It happened with the play. But, you know, with the play, it was something like 90 pages of single-space type and one woman uttering all those words. I was terrified.
And how do you...
To the point where I was in tears. I was really in tears, and the director kept saying to me, what is wrong? And I said, I don't know, I'm just so scared. He said, well, why are you scared? And that's when I found out that I was afraid I would disappoint. And he said, you know, he just thinks I'm living, you know, everything wonderful. He says, you think you're going to disappoint? He was just astonished.
So when you look at we're almost out of time here, but when you look at your performances, you're a critic?
I'm the worst critic.
Are you?
And most actors are, I think. But I think I'm looking for perfection, which, of course, I know that's ridiculous. It's unreasonable. But that's what you want to be. You want people to love you.
Yes.
And if anybody tells you otherwise, they're full of it.
And you have a performance tonight. Not to make you nervous.
I'm not nervous about that tonight. It's about my life, so I kind of know the way it goes.
Well, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
It was great for me.
It's been fabulous for us as well. And
so it's the Kimmel Center tonight?
It is.
7:30.
It is. And I should say that Rita Moreno presenting a biographical behind-the-scenes conversation, My Life from Zero to 60 Plus 20. And it's at the Kimmel Center tonight at 7:30. A special launch of the center's three-year initiative called Voz Congreso at the Kimmel Center. And it's a series of conversations with acclaimed Latino celebrities and intellectuals. Just a quick question to you as well. You're also in a TV show.
Yeah, oh, a series with Fran Drescher. I'm playing her mother and talking just like her. And I love that, being a Puerto Rican, playing this Queens Jewish matron.
Right.
I love talking to her like that. In fact, she asked me one day, she said, were you around Jewish people around? I said, all the time in my life. I said to her, I was married to one of you people for 46 years.
Well, you're very good on accents.
Thank you.
Well, again, Rita Moreno, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. And you can go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program, including Facebook and Twitter. And we do have that on our Facebook page, Rita Moreno playing drums on The Muppet Show. And Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. And the show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us. And we do want to end things with Rita Moreno's twist on If Swing Goes, I Go Too. And that's from her self-styled 2000 CD. Let's listen to that.
Some say, Rita, it's tragic the way you cling to swing. I say, girlfriend, it's pure magic. When they outlaw Tommy Dorsey, well, I guess I will be through. Take my bow, my dough, my diamond ring, house, spouse, sable fling, but they'll never repossess my swing. 'Cause when swing goes, I go too.
And again,